Welcome to Flora and Fauna Day at the Senate Rules Committee, which I will now call to order. We have several items on the agenda for designating state animals, and we will start with opening a public hearing on SCR 4, which designates the border collie as official state dog. Cherie.
Madam Chair and members, Senate concurrent resolution 4 designates the border collie as the state dog. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and the fiscal and revenue paperwork indicates that there is no impact associated with this legislation.
Okay, Senator Hansel. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator for District 29, Northeast and North Central Oregon. Thank you for your willingness to hear SCR 4, designating the Border Collie as the official state dog for Oregon. I brought this bill forward at the request of Ron Folk. At the time of drafting, he was a constituent of mine from my own Oregon. He has since moved to Unity and is a member of Senator Ferriola's district. I met with Ron a couple of years ago during the Ways and Means Roadshow hearing in Boardman. He asked if I would sponsor a bill to designate the Border Collie as the official state dog of Oregon, a project he had been working on for about 8 or so previous years. I told him I was unable in the short session as I only had 2 bills and both were spoken for. However, I would drop it in the next long session. Ron has been snowed in his home in Unity and as such plans to testify over the phone. However, I appreciate your willingness to hear the bill and to start a conversation on why the Border Collie, a dog that has its roots in agriculture and ranching, a dog that has been used on the farms in Oregon dating back to the mid-1800s as the official state dog. Thank you very much, and I will yield to Mr. Folk to answer any questions you might have about the Border Collie and this particular bill, or if you have any questions of my, for me, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you. We have your constituent on the phone, so let's... Mr. Folk? Hello? Mr. Folk?
Yes.
Hi, this is...
Ron.
Hi, this is Senator Jenny Burdick and Chair of the Rules Committee, and with me are our Vice Chair, Senator Ferrioli, and Senator Beyer, and Senator Boquist. So would you like to give your testimony for SCR 4?
Yes, I would, and I'm ready. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the distinguished panel to testify for the SCR 4 legislative bill for Oregon's black and white heritage to make the Border Collie the state dog. As a native Oregonian, I was born in the state in the 1930s. My journey started from Russia in 1908 with my grandfather immigrating from Odessa as a German looking for a better life. His journey started from Bremen on the steamship Maine and to Ellis Island and homestead of our ranch in Box Elder, Montana. Having hard times during the Depression, he decided to move to Portland to build Liberty ships with all the family to fight the war. My time in Oregon began in 1938, and I always had a love for agriculture and animals, and I always felt at home, and I had an opportunity to move out of the state, but my heart was embedded here forever, and I never wanted to leave. Over the last 50 years of owning 2 agricultural businesses in the western part of the state, my wife and I retired to our ranch here in Unity, Oregon. I have had border collies for many years and trialing and teaching stock dog herding to ranchers and 4-H students. We raised California red sheep and had a breed in the past year to have the highly qualified breeding program for border collies. Having an interest in my family's journey and how they got here, I always felt the same about how the border collie got here and their heritage here in Oregon. When talking to people about BCs, their answers were always, oh, they're the most intelligent dogs in the world. The general public seems to place the Border Collie at the top of the list, And in 2001, I started to place the Border Collie in history and asked the United States Postal Service for a commemorative stamp. In 2007, they placed it on the list. And the Baker City Regional Museum approved a display for the county recognizing the contribution to ranching based on national interest and historical perspective. And I have no monetary ties to making this bill, and it's based strictly on history. Contrary to all the belief, sheep and cattle did not come overland from the east. Dr. John McLaughlin imported some of them from Europe to Clatsop County and up the Columbia River. As the sheep and cattle industry increased, the Border Collie was brought into Oregon from England. Shanticle was one of the world's largest wool stations and in the United States, which drew buyers from all over the world, and 4 million pounds of wool were sold in 1901 alone. The Border Collie, as today, is the same intense breed of dog from the originals from England and Scotland. The herding instinct is still the main breeding trait, and I believe the modern Border Collies are able to think far more intelligent, as the cattle industry is a much tougher task to handle. The West Coast is a showcase for the top trials in the United States and in Klamath Falls, as one of the top trials in the U.S. Oregon Sheepdog Society is the oldest sheepdog society in the United States, and it was established in the 1930s. I never met a Border Collie I did not like. In our last litter, we had some of the toughest dogs I ever had to train, and the challenge of my life. The first pup I had was going to sell, and it was just evolved into the best dog I ever had. He had one blue eye, a long, skinny, short ears, and big feet. But that was a wonderful dog, and he was worth $1 million to me. My Abby is the pride and joy of my life, and she is the best friend in my life, next to my wife. We got her from a breeder in Klamath Falls 16 years ago, and I can remember the breeder saying he thought she would be able to read my mind, and he was right. Abby's great-great-grandfather was a 1996 National She Cow Champion, and his great-great-great-grandfather was an International Sheepdog Champion. I want to honor the Oregon history, but nothing else. Sheep were part of building the West, and it's a sheep. We're brought in to feed the miners in various parts of the town. The largest sheep ranchers were in Heppner, Oregon. Art Miner, the Bartholomew brothers, and still today, the largest sheep ranch is the Krebs Ranch in Ione, Oregon. And they are featured at the Sage Visitor Center in Boardman, Oregon. The former governor, Ted Kulongowski, and Governor Brian Schweitzer both have endorsed this bill. Now, I'm going to say that Alaska has the state Malamute and is their state dog. And if Maine, the state of Maine, were to have a dog, it would be the Labrador Retriever. If New York was to have a state dog, it would be the Poodle. And if California were to have a state dog, it would be the Mexican Chihuahua. And there's only one choice for Oregon, and that would be the Border Collie.
Thank you very much.
All right, just one more sentence here. Oregon's rich history is one of the legacies left from the pioneers as the sheepdogs that helped build the West yesterday and into the future. I feel very fortunate to spend this part of my life with the greatest dog of all time, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions from the committee? Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Fox. And you can stay on the line if you like and listen to the testimony, or you're free to hang up if you'd like to.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay. Let's see. We have a no dogs policy in the Capitol, so if there are people with dogs that want to testify, I want to bring them up first. Are you testifying?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we'll ask you to take the dogs out.
Okay, they are service dogs.
So. Oh, they're service
yes.
dogs? Oh, okay. Is that a service dog as well?
Yep.
Okay. All right, welcome.
Thank you. I don't really have a plan for what I'm supposed to say.
Just give your name first.
Becky Davis. And we are here for the Newfoundland to be the state dog. We were here a year ago under Representative Vic Gilliam, but he's become ill, so we've kind of lost our direction where we're supposed to go. The Newfoundland came over with Lewis and Clark, led the way. Their dog, Seaman, is featured all over Oregon. We have more than 20 statues of Seaman. We have museums dedicated. We have a day, Seaman Day, at Fort Clatsop. Lewis and Clark College has him, Seaman, as their mascot, the Newfoundland dog. And we think he's already so well representative, it just makes sense to have him as the state dog. We own 11 Newfoundlands because we want to be part of what Lewis and Clark started with, the Newfoundland dog. And they're natural water rescue animals. They don't have to be trained to do it. When my kids go into the river, we have to put the dogs away because they will go in and they will bring them out. They will drag them out kicking and screaming. And that is something we've never trained them to do. They will pull in a boat. They will pull in a boat full of 20 grown men.
All right. Thank you. Is that it?
I guess.
I appreciate
it.
Are there questions from the committee?
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Our next witnesses are Brian Posowitz and Scott Beckstad.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Brian Posowitz. I'm here today on behalf of an organization called Humane Oregon. We were formed in 2014 to help advocate for animal welfare in Oregon's political process and elections. And we have board members from several different parts of Oregon's animal welfare community. We actually oppose this resolution, not because we don't like border collies, because we like them very much. But only because we believe that a rescued shelter dog, as proposed in House Resolution 16, is a better choice for state dog. Border collies undoubtedly have many things to recommend them, and we think that's well explained in the proposed resolution. But we also think that every breed of dog is the best to somebody and probably has some argument for reflecting Oregon history or values. We're also a little concerned, we have to say, that choosing a purebred dog as the state dog will encourage people to buy dogs from breeders, which will encourage more breeding in a world where we already have more dogs than we have homes for them. Choosing a rescued shelter dog, on the other hand, would encourage people to provide homes for homeless dogs that are already here. It also would recognize and honor all of the great work by local humane societies and animal shelters in Oregon and all of the big-hearted people in Oregon who have already adopted a rescued dog from a shelter. Choosing a rescued shelter dog also would answer the charge that this whole business is a trivial affair that distracts from the real work of the legislature. Because by encouraging people to adopt dogs from shelters, you could also be reducing the need for space and animal care services at all of the county animal control services in the state. Oregon would not be the first state to see the wisdom in that approach. Last year, a Republican-led effort made the adoptable dog the state dog of Georgia. In 2015, California made the shelter pet its official state pet. And in 2013, Colorado declared its state pet to be dogs and cats that are adopted from Colorado shelters and rescues. And in each of these instances, lawmakers explained their decision as being not just about picking a symbol, but about helping to educate people about pet adoption and hopefully reduce some of the burden on animal control facilities. So with all due respect to border collies everywhere, we encourage you to defer this bill, this resolution, in favor of the resolution to name the rescued shelter dog the official state dog. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you could keep your comments short, we're getting a little time sensitive here.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. Mr. Posowitz has, I think, very nicely stated what our position is, which is that, you know, we have an opportunity with a resolution like this to really achieve some good policy goals. And so we would urge the legislature to pass HCR 16, which recognizes shelter dogs as the official state dog. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel. Thank you very much. Brian Caldicott? Ian. Oh, Dr. Ian.
Yes.
Caldicott. You'll correct me, I'm sure.
Hey, down.
Chairman Burdick, of members of the committee. Well, my name is Ian Caldicott. I used to be a research scientist. Now I am a sheep farmer. Like many like me, I became a sheep farmer because of border collies. I can count among the people that take lessons from me alone more than a dozen people that have moved into the livestock industry because of border collies. Through having one as a pet, getting one from a shelter, who wanted then to use that dog's natural instinct, became so enamored of what they do that now they all raise livestock and make part of their living that way. I make my living entirely from raising livestock and training dogs and teaching people how to train the dogs and how to use these dogs. You will find these dogs working on small farms all across the state. No dog has contributed more to the agricultural economy of the state than the border collie, both in sheep and cattle operations across the state, from the largest ones, including big commercial sheep operations down in Brownsville that use border collies every single day, moving their large flocks from grass seed field to grass seed field, to small operations like mine that simply would not exist without the dogs. Small farmers can't afford to hire help, but there's a lot of work to do, and these dogs do more of it than we do. One of the things that makes them so valuable is their work ethic. They will work nonstop. As my wife was told by a Montana rancher friend of hers, a good border collie is better than two cowboys. They work harder, they don't complain, and you don't have to bail them out of jail on Sunday mornings. We have a state tree, a state nut, a state mushroom, a state microbe, a state fruit, a state fish, a state crustacean, and a state beverage. All of these things have one thing in common. The chosen entity for those things is something that has an economic impact on the state. And no dog has a bigger economic impact on the state than a border collie does. The Oregon legislature has a long history of supporting and recognizing agriculture. This is a portion of the agriculture community that is absolutely essential to almost every small livestock farm in the state. I had a client from Bend who sent me a dog to be trained. When it went home to him, he called me up a month later. He said, I don't know how I ever did this without a dog before. I have to work half as hard as I used to. These dogs also bring money into the state through competitions, through sheepdog competitions. We have some of the biggest, largest competitions in the state. This year alone, we will have over 30 days of sheepdog competition. That's just the highest level of competition. That doesn't count the minor levels. Each one of those days of competition brings in $3,000 to $5,000 of revenue and entry fees, as well as contributions to the restaurant and hotel businesses in the communities that host them. So my argument for the border collie being the state dog is that they contribute to the economy just like all of these other state creatures that we have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? I think your dog needs some water. He was kind of panting.
Oh, he's worried those big black dogs, they look a little bit too much like my sheep. And he has actually a special case. He's a special case of a service dog. Todd is here with me in the chair because this dog is specially trained to help somebody in a wheelchair do herding. So he does things that most herding dogs can't do and has to be trained in a special way to work with the wheelchair, take advantages of the strengths and limitations of the wheelchair to allow Todd to be a fully functioning member of a farm.
Great. So he's earned a glass of water.
Absolutely. In fact, it took me 3 hours to get him this clean last night.
Right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, that concludes our hearing on SCR 4. So we will close the public hearing on SCR 4 and open up a public hearing on SCR 18, designating the osprey as the official state bird.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Concurrent Resolution 18 designates the osprey as the official state bird. There are no amendments and no fiscal or revenue impact associated with this measure.
Okay. Bipartisan panel.
That's good. It is.
Welcome.
There's no partisanship among bird lovers.
That's true. Senator Burdick and colleagues. I'm State Senator Fred Girard representing Senate District 9. I bring you this bill, and some people would go, why are you trying to redo what history is? And I think there's been a tremendous misjustice as far as naming the state bird. Most of you know I love the outdoors. Specifically, I actually really, really like birds. I have binoculars all through my house, so if I see a bird, I get pretty excited that I haven't seen before. When I went to Hawaii, I checked out and tried to find the nene bird. In New Zealand, it was the kiwi, and I just got back from Africa, which I saw the world's ugliest bird, the marabou stork, which it deserves the name. Anyway, There is another reason that I want to do this, is that it's kind of a generational thing. I spent a lot of time in the outdoors, like I said, and I want to get kids jazzed, and I want to get them jazzed about birds. And it's kind of difficult with the state bird that we have. And right now there are five other states that have the same state bird. They are Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, North Dakota, and Montana. So it's not a unique bird to Oregon. It's really their population-based is more in the Midwest and in the Rocky Mountains. It's a pretty nondescript bird, and it's hard to find. If you look in Birds of the Willamette Valley, they'll tell you your best chance in the Willamette Valley is to go down between Albany and Eugene. This is the bird that we're talking about. It's about the size of a robin. It's mostly brown on top. It's got a little bit of a yellow breast. Now, what it's really known for, I'll be real honest, is its call. It has a wonderful call. But for me, the call of the loon is prettier. But I think that's the reason that it got its designation. It got its designation in 1927. And the Audubon Society put out a poll, in which you'll hear from the Audubon Society. And they put out a poll, and then the governor decided to decree that the Western Meadowlark would be the state bird. On the other hand, the osprey, and for you that have never, don't pay attention to your birds, this is an osprey, okay, a pair of them. If you, those big, big nests that you see on, you know, on trees and power lines that are really high, those are almost all osprey nests. There's a few of them that are eagle. But it's the most common raptor in the state of Oregon. I know the bill says they have a 5-foot wingspan. It can go up almost to 6 feet. You know, you have a really big wingspan. And the nice thing about them is you can find them in downtown Portland and on the Willamette River, and you can find them throughout rural Oregon. They're an easy bird to spot. And it's just they're a real beautiful bird. And there are things that I really like about the osprey, and what I live on a river, as most of you know, and it's the way they fish. They'll be flying around, and then they just drop down. Now, if you picture a pelican, they're getting the fish with their bill. These guys get them with their talons.
And so they got to go on into the water, grab them with their talons, and they do so in such a manner that it's aerodynamic, that it comes out and the fish's head is always pointing forward. And if you want to know, they have to be pretty smart birds, because there's an optical illusion looking into water. There's the light changes a little bit. So if the bird doesn't adapt to its dive, it actually starves. So these birds have to learn that optical illusion. For me personally, this is going to sound funny, but I use the osprey to fish. And so when I go up to the high lakes to fish, if I see the osprey fishing, I know that the fish are in the upper level, so I'll fly fish, bobber fish, or troll. If I don't see them fishing, then I know that they're in deeper water. So for me personally, this is a kind of, it's a more important bill than one might
think.
And I really think a misjustice was done in 1927, giving it to the meadowlark. So I wanted to have the beauty pageant revisited, and I really like the osprey.
Thank you. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate, District 17, Northwest Portland, unincorporated Washington County in Beaverton. And I'm really honored to sit here with my colleague and fellow birder, Senator Girard. And we're delighted to have Representative Vile now, who provides us with these beautiful osprey pictures. I am very excited to be part of this bill, because one of the things that Senator Girard mentioned that I completely agree with is the need to get kids really excited about the outdoors and about nature. And it's really tough to do if you cannot see stuff in a daily basis. And as he said, the osprey is a big bird. It's ubiquitous across our state. It's easy to spot. It has a very distinctive flight pattern. There is a reason that these specialized flying vehicles, I don't even know what to call them because they're kind of a blend between a helicopter and a plane, are called ospreys, because they both hover and fly forward. There aren't a lot of birds that hover the way osprey do. There aren't a lot of birds that have that kind of adaptability and ability to work in a lot of different areas. The other thing that I will say personally that I'm particularly partial to, osprey mate for life, and they come back to the same nest year after year after year. So it's easy to track them, and there are webcams everywhere that show them. So kids can get to know these birds and get engaged, and school children can follow them in the classroom really easily. Meadowlarks, on the other hand, it's usually one male for two females. They change partners every year. They nest in different places, kind of go all over the place. So it's kind of tough for kids to see the life cycle and understand how the effects of food sources and all that kind of stuff can affect this. And you can encourage osprey to nest by providing nesting platforms for them, which means you can attract them to areas. So it's a very exciting bird. It's fierce. It's independent, just like Oregonians. They're easy to spot, so kids get engaged with them. And they represent some of the really most important aspects of Oregon, our rivers, our birds, our natural life. And I think they're just a fabulous representative of the Oregon spirit. And I urge your support for this bill.
Thank you. The question did arise as to why a fisherman would support the competition.
Because it's a symbiotic partnership.
The reason is, honestly, I use them to know how to fish. And sometimes I can give you an example at Clear Lake. I was kind of sleeping because fishing was really bad. And one lit right next to the boat. I mean, it just went and made a heck of a splash. Comes out with a fish and then flies over my boat like to say, hey, you dummy, what the heck's the problem here? So, and they're braggarts, because I swear in front of the river, if they catch something, they'll come over my deck just to show me the fish. So it's kind of crazy
too.
That way.
They're really remarkable birds.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, I was just going to point out, they really aren't competitors. We call it fishing because we don't always succeed. They call it catching because they always do.
That's
true.
Senator, that's exactly correct.
Especially if you fly.
That's right.
Do you have a question?
No, madam. I think, you know, one of these aides is probably close to poaching here. You know, he's using these birds to go get his fish. I'm a little questionable.
Yeah, well, that might work.
You have to get it from him first, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Are there other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. Chris Thomas and Mike Savaggio.
We're not together.
Who goes first, me?
You guys can find
anyone with a duck on their front.
Okay.
Senator Burdick, committee, thank you for hearing me out. My name is Chris Thomas. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. Before I explain my reasons for opposition to this measure, let me thank Senator Girard for courageously bringing the matter of the state bird to the Senate for the first time in Oregon history. I emphasize courageously because it can be politically dangerous to meddle with long traditional symbols that represent affinity and potentially deep-seated emotions. If you doubt this, talk to people in the South about Confederate-themed flags, or talk to Oregonians who attended Roseburg High School. Symbols can bring people together and tear them apart. The bill lays out a laundry list of valid reasons why the meadow lark should no longer be our state bird. I'm very familiar with these reasons because I used virtually the same list in a petition-based attempt to change the bird to the duck in 2011. Sadly, this new bill is as much an indictment of the meadow lark as it is a testimonial to the osprey. He points out that the Legislative Assembly never formally adopted the Western meadow lark. I've attached two exhibits to show that the meadow lark was never adopted at all, formally or informally. One of them is the Oregon Revised Statutes, where if you look in our official list of state symbols, there is no state bird. And the other is this document, which is the original proclamation of state bird by Governor Patterson in 1927. And this public hearing today is the first time any member of the legislature will have officially acknowledged for the record existence of the actual document that the meadowlark relies upon for de facto state bird status. The Patterson Proclamation has been waiting more than 89 years to be seen by the legislature. Now, by this testimony, our proclaimed state bird has finally made it to this building so that the deliberative body can now decide its fate. I present the proclamation as rebuttal evidence, a governmental oversight, and a piece of unfinished business. There's a particularly relevant final paragraph that if I could read to you. It says, therefore, I, I.L. Patterson, Governor of Oregon, by authority in me vested, in accordance with the decision of the school children of the state, do hereby proclaim Western Meadowlark State Bird of Oregon, and I will ask that this proclamation be ratified in the next session of the state legislature, and that the Western Meadowlark recorded officially as the state bird, in which case it would have appeared in here. Patterson clearly knew the difference between a proclamation and a statute. He knew that his proclamation was a temporary stopgap, just to address the issue until the legislature could ratify or quash. It would be a year and a half before the next session. Mysteriously, Patterson did not give the proclamation to the legislature at the beginning of the session, and he died in office without getting his proclamation ratified. Hence, there is no state bird in ORS 186, and until today, this matter has been waiting to be heard by you in this, an official public hearing. According to the proclamation, 80,000 Oregon kids participated and 45,000 chose the meadowlark. Think about the logistics of doing that poll in 1927. The Oregon Audubon Society had made the effort to ask kids to choose between Western bluebird, varied thrush, Oregon junco, white crown sparrow, and Western meadowlark. How many Oregonians have voiced support for the osprey? Nowhere in the bill does it quantify the affinity of the osprey with Oregonians. Oregon has over 400 species of birds. As legislatures, shouldn't there be a supporting groups listed for the nominee instead of picking one that you think is appropriate, primarily because it's not the meadowlark? This is the first ever joint resolution on a state bird. It is nominating just the osprey. The arguments are sound. Most Oregonians have never seen a meadowlark, and five states have the same bird. The osprey is a good and logical choice to be nominated. The thing is, only one state, our state, had a bird naming contest for school children. The kindergartners from 1927 today are at least 95 years old. I would speculate of the 80,000 meadowlark Oregonians, of those still alive, their number would be in the hundreds. Of them, the number that actually remember participating in the poll is very small and rapidly approaching zero. To find an actual meadowlark Oregonian would put a face to what many see as a trivial issue. Oregon is a special place with a rich history. The things that we do democratically as people, like the Oregon Revised Statutes, are not trivial. They are what define us as Oregonians and illustrate our values to those who want to know us. If we want to make a change, don't we owe it to our citizens to acknowledge our proud history of asking children or citizens on this matter? The Oregon thing to do would respect the past and embrace the future. Why not let the meadowlark be voted down, ratified, or given a chance to stand for re-election as incumbent against Osprey, Duck, or whatever in a new poll of Oregon school children? Maybe the Audubon folks would be willing to do another one, or ask the schools, or the voters, or local media, or Twitter. As written, I oppose SCR 18 because it ignores and disrespects the rich history of our current de facto, unofficial, unratified, unoriginal, and virtually unseeable in Western Oregon state bird, the Western Meadowlark. At a minimum, it needs to acknowledge the efforts and participation of the Audubon societies and the mostly dead 80,000 Meadowlark Oregonians. Now that you've taken delivery on Patterson's proclamation, you should either ratify it, vote it down, or do something worthy of a state that flies upon her own wings. Thank you. Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Salvaggio. I'm here representing the Portland Audubon Society. Well, I like the meadowlark. I just wanted to go on the record by saying we also like the osprey. It's a fine bird. It's a fascinating creature. We have no objection to the osprey or the humble duck. However, I'll point out that in terms of Oregon setting the example, we've led on a lot of things. The bottle bill, direct election of U.S. senators, securitization of our lottery revenue. One of the other things that we've led on is the adoption of the Western Meadowlark as a state symbol. It's nearly universally recognized as the Oregon state bird across the country and in Oregon. Yes, there are five or four other states that count it, depending on whether you recognize the actual species or just the genus. But Oregon was first, and I think that's because it was a pretty good idea. The meadowlark used to be prevalent all over the state. If the legislature would like to partner with the Audubon in trying to reclaim some of that grassland that it calls home, we'd be thrilled to get that into more areas of the state so that more of our residents could see and appreciate the meadowlark. But at the end of the day, we just kind of go back to that 1927 process and feel that a state symbol should reflect more than just our imagery in its selection. Our state symbol should reflect our values also in how it is selected in the process that we choose to get there. Having a statewide engaging process, I think, not only checks our box, but it also, I think, addresses some of the engagement opportunities that Senator Steiner Hayward and Senator Garrod spoke to. We would be thrilled if there was a designation for, say, official state raptor, and we had a statewide process to engage Oregon school children again and get them interested in birding and get them interested in the fact that hey, we have a meadowlark, but what about this other very fascinating species here? I think at some point, and I don't know if it was you actually that recommended a state waterfowl.
Yes.
Yep. So there's plenty of room to go around and to begin equating one bird species with another. I think that's a false choice. But I will say that we share Senator Grodd's concerns. The concern has been often brought up to me, but doesn't Oregon fly with its own wings? Isn't this something that should be unique to Oregon? And I'll point out that in addition to leading on the on the western meadowlark as a state bird. We also led on the beaver as a state animal, even though New York picked that up after us. We led on the state fish as the Chinook salmon, even though Alaska picked that up after us. We led on the square dance as the state dance in 1977, and since then 20 other states have adopted that. We're a leader, and frankly I'm proud to have been the first state to pick the western meadowlark as a state symbol. And we would ask this committee that as we move forward on this bill, we look at options that are more engaging and respect the process that happened in the 1920s, and also look towards ducks and osprey and other birds as something that we can have coexist as symbols of our state.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Roblin.
So I was just interested in our other guest, and was the Western Meadowlark other state do it before we did?
I think Montana did it a couple of years before, but I could be wrong, but I did research that.
Okay. Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Montana adopted the Western Meadowlark in 1931.
Okay. Oh, so I'm wrong.
Okay. Okay, just checking.
All right. Good question. Thank you very much. Okay, that concludes our hearing on SCR 18. We'll close the public hearing and open a public hearing on SB 225.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 225 specifies that the treasurer of a political committee or petition committee is personally responsible for the performance of specified filing requirements and duties that are related to the committee statements of organization, expenditures, and contribution. Additionally, the bill prescribes an effective date 91 days after the 2017 Legislative Assembly adjourns sine die. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and fiscal and revenue paperwork indicates that there is no impact associated with this legislation.
We have Steve Trout and Steve Elzinga, the two Steves. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Steve Elzinga, and I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for the Secretary of State. We're here today to support Senate Bill 225 in order to increase accountability in Oregon's campaign system. And in the past, this proposal has been considered, and there have been questions and concerns that several legislators have had about the specific wording of this proposal. And so we've submitted for your consideration in OLIS a number of different alternatives for how we could achieve the same accountability mechanisms that we're trying to get at in Senate Bill 225. We believe the bill as written is good to go if the legislature so chooses, but there are also other alternative ways to get at the same accountability measures. And so we're glad to work with the committee on whatever approach that you all would like to take. And Steve can give you a little bit of the background on this bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Steve Trout, State Election Director, and Mr. Elzinga gave a good summary. In 2013, there were some amendments to this section to clean up and make sure that candidates themselves were liable for candidate committees. And in the drafting, this provision for the petition committees and the political committees was dropped off. And so, and that was Senate Bill 145 in 2013. And so we've brought this back just as a cleanup to restore that original language. But I understand there's been some concern about that original treasurer being liable. And so we've provided some alternatives for your consideration and are happy to answer any questions about what those might mean or not. And would invite any questions.
Okay. Could you just summarize briefly what the alternatives are? We have them here on the OLIS, but...
Sure. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we've got two separate. So we've got petition committees and we've got political committees, and the options are very similar. So the first option is to restore it to what it was prior to 2013, which was the treasurer was liable because there are no individuals, because these are petition committees or political committees. A second option is to have the treasurer liable unless someone chooses to select or to name someone else in the statement of organization. organization when they file that paperwork. A third one is to just have a spot on that statement of organization for a designee, whoever that would be, and there wouldn't be the default to the treasurer. We could have all of the chief petitioners for petition committees or all of the directors in a political committee that could be required. And then the last option is the first listed chief petitioner or director in the case of the political committees. The one concern I will share is when there's more than one person that's potentially liable. We've had the problem. That's actually what led to the bill in 2013, where one director wants to pay the fine and one director wants to go to a hearing, and how you balance that out. And so, we can make all of these options work. That is the one concern with having multiple people liable as option four on both of these would be.
But before this got inadvertently deleted, before it was just the treasurer, the buck stopped there, correct?
Correct.
And were there problems identified with that system before?
Madam Chair, we didn't have any problems with that, and are confident we can go forward with that. But as Mr. Alzinga said, we heard that in the previous session there were some concerns about that, and so we're here with options if that's the desire of the legislature to move forward.
But
there.
As the bill stands now, it simply reinstates what was the law before it was inadvertently.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Questions from the committee, Senator Beyer.
Yeah, Steve is. It seems like we changed this a while ago to out of some concern that on candidate committees, which I guess would be political committees, that the candidate was always liable rather than their treasurer, because treasurers are often volunteers.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, actually, that was the bill in 2013 that it had been candidates or treasurers in the statute. And so that amendment in 2013 made it just candidates that were liable. But then for the petition committees and the political committees, where there are no individuals involved, right. that's where the drafting error occurred. And so that was left without anyone named in the statute.
So under this, the political committees do not include candidate committees?
That's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So let me just clarify, in the absence of the two gentlemen who are testifying, one being gone from the Secretary of State and other being in another job, there were problems with this issue, which is why this bill is before us again, Madam Chair. The basic issue in the 21st century is, as Senator Beyer pointed out, the candidates we did put back in, and I did work with the Secretary of State to make sure, okay, candidates, you're guilty. Doesn't matter who your treasurer is, you're guilty. The issue on the treasurer, as was pointed out, is that in many cases now we have professional treasurers. And in fact, I could easily go to Orstar right now and list through a series of professional treasurers that are listed in Orstar that no longer are professional treasurers. Their businesses have been sold and their passwords passed to other people, so on and so forth. So the issue with the treasurer is trying to make sure that either the petition committee or the political committee, you know, at least provides, I suppose, the option of a designee, I'm not opposed to that, that says this person is responsible, or our professional treasurer has agreed that, you know, I will get hung if this goes awry. Because what has in fact happened, and there are cases that went all the way to the Justice Department that outline where individuals were making less than accurate filings, we'll just say, and the treasurer had no knowledge whatsoever, yet the treasurer was the person that ended up being held accountable. And so that's sort of why we're sitting right here. That's why Senator Beyer remembers we did change this. The previous Secretary of State and I worked through some of the things in the designee portion that was brought up, and I completely concur with both witnesses where, you know, it's hard to figure out which of the three might be responsible on a petition committee, because a petition committee has three petitioners. But again, the goal that we were trying to get here is to make that those people responsible for the actions of the committee, whether it be a political committee or a petition committee, were the ones held responsible and not a professional treasurer, or in many cases, just some poor person who said, yeah, I can be the treasurer and check it once, you know, every year and make sure it's right, not knowing that somebody else was doing the work and they were going to get stuck with a $2,000 bill. So that's why we're here, Madam Chair. And I am opposed to the bill as written. And I'm perfectly happy to take the advice of these gentlemen with the designee or something along that line.
Well, just to follow up on his point, would it make sense to have the petitioners, one of the petitioners required to step forward and take on this role? Otherwise, they couldn't file their committee.
So, Madam Chair, that is one of the alternatives that we provided, and we're happy. That's definitely doable, and we're happy to pursue any of those alternatives. We were just trying to restore it to what it was, and it's not our role to make those policy decisions. And we
I think Senator Boquist makes a good point that you want to make sure that the right person, the person in the decision making capacity, is actually taking on the liability. Senator Roblin, do you have a question?
No, I just wanted to just admitting that you complimented him on his good decision.
I can't help myself. All right. Other questions?
I hadn't thought about it before, so I thank him.
Other questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Boquist.
I would just ask the two of them, I would ask a question, which would be, the two of you, well, Steve knows my position, you just heard it, so which would be the most efficient from the Secretary of State's point of view if you're going to try and either hold someone accountable or ensure that the treasurer doesn't get stuck without information?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I think the easiest for us to administer is just to put a line on the statement of organization to designate who the liable person is. We just need to know someone to go after, and if that's in the same place every time, that's the easiest for us to facilitate.
I like that term, go after. Yeah, that's a good one.
Would you, if we did go that route, would you recommend that it be required to be one of the petitioners? In other words, so you wouldn't have somebody putting their brother-in-law on there.
So, Madam Chair, from a purely administrative role, it doesn't matter. We would require, we can't take the filing without someone listed, and whoever that person is, then we can discuss with them any problems with the accounts, and we've had somebody, similar to, who's listed as for service of process in a legal proceeding.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm happy with any of those options, because when you do file this, just so you know, just for the record here, is that even if it's a designee, the treasurer is the person that has to validate it in the ORSTAR system. The treasurer would know before they validate it if they either got designated as they're on the hook or know who the person who is on the hook, one of the two. And that's the importance of trying to hold the committee people responsible, not the professional treasurers.
Got it.
And this is the simplest way. We did, Madam Chair, look at, say, well, maybe the professional treasurer should be the alternate filer. It just gets too bloody complex. It's trying to keep it simple, stupid.
Thank you. We need more of that around here. Thank you. Other questions from the committee? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will take this under advisement and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 225 and open a public hearing on SCR 26. Sheree.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Concurrent Resolution 26 recognizes Newburgh as the Camellia City of Oregon. There are no amendments associated with this measure, and fiscal and revenue paperwork indicates that there is also no impact associated with this measure.
Doesn't look like any opposition.
Welcome, Representative Post.
Committee Day.
Committee, I'll have to say that this resolution was brought to me by Senator Thatcher, who wanted to have it adopted in time for Newburgh's Camellia Festival. So
when
you will
that?
See. You
April
will see,
8th.
You will see an emergency clause on here, which Senator Farioli has given his clearance for. So, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Bill Post, for the record, House District 25 out of Kaiser. And I now know where I rank. I've come after the dogs, I come after the bird, and I come after whatever the last thing was. And I'm here for the Camellia City of Oregon.
You might get it. There's no opposing dogs, no opposing birds, it looks like.
So. Apparently, yeah. And there's no flower opposition. And normally I would blow up at the sight of a emergency clause on a bill, but apparently my name is on this bill. Senator Thatcher thought this was very, very important, and if she tells me it's important, then I go ahead and say, yes, it is. And that is that we need to – we seriously, though, Newburgh is – we'd like to see it as the camellia city of Oregon, and as has been mentioned already, Senator Thatcher's having her surgery today, and I think it's actually going on right now. The bill was initiated by a constituent from Newburgh. The mayor and the city council of Newburgh requested that we recognize the city as the Camellia City of Oregon. At the beginning of April, Newburgh will be the host of the 2017 American Camellia Society Convention and would love to be able to present this SCR at the convention. The city has a long history of being camellia enthusiasts. April 4 of 1949, Newburgh City Council unanimously designated the camellia as the official city flower. And in 1997, Mayor Donna Proctor unveiled an official camellia flag for the city, which is displayed and flown regularly all over Newburgh. And that's kind of it. SCR 26, we'd like to see the Camellia City of Oregon, Newburgh. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for representing Senator Thatcher.
You bet.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you. Senator Roblin.
Do we know how many other cities claim the camellia? We had to find that out.
With dogs and birds.
Madam Chair, Senator Roblin, I'm still not sure what a camellia is. So.
Good answer.
Apparently, there's one across the street, and my chief of staff is going to take me on a road trip this afternoon to show me camellias.
Okay.
I smell them, but I'm not sure I can identify them.
Fair enough.
They're beautiful. They look like little mini roses.
Okay. I know they're
big. They're not mini. About like that?
Well, some of them are big. Yeah.
I've never seen this.
Oh, we have some disagreement on this.
They don't stand up well in the rain.
There goes the bill. Thank you very much, Representative Post.
Thank you.
Oh, Slidell, Louisiana, I'm told, is a camellia city.
Okay. Who is? What's
Slidell, Louisiana.
Oh, Louisiana. Okay.
Yes.
No other in Oregon, it looks like. That's good.
Sacramento is a camellia city.
And Sacramento is also a camellia city. Did you get that, Representative Post?
Sacramento, too.
Sacramento, too. All right, thank you.
There's nothing more to do on Senate rules than talk about for hours.
We will close the public hearing on SCR 26 and open a work session on SCR 26. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move SCR 26 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved SCR 26 to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I do believe that Senator Thatcher will be back in time to carry this, so we will have that happen. Okay, committee, good work today on Flora and Fauna Day. We are adjourned. Fauna Day, we are adjourned.